Here we go. Right. Hello, this is Pat Rodwell from the Unaganaguna Project, and it's Sunday, the 7th of September 2025, and I'm here to interview Jen. Jen, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Jennifer Swan, and I was born in 1981, and I'm living in North County, Dublin.
Right, great. Now, could we start by you telling me a little bit about where you're from, your family?
Yeah, so I was born in North County Mayo, in a place called, well, out in the sticks, really. It was the nearest village was 3 miles. So I lived out in the countryside with my family, which consisted of my mum and dad, and one of us up until the age of nine, my granny, and 4 brothers and 3 sisters. So there was 11 of us in the home when I was a young child. So yeah, we lived out there. My dad was a farmer. My mum stayed at home. She was kind of a housewife, all really a bit of everything. She did some farming as well. It was a small farm, but everyone kind of chipped in, and that's where I spent my kind of early years.
Describe your family home.
Yeah, so I don't have really any recollection of the first few years of my life, but we lived in an old farmhouse that my grandparents and even my great grandparents, I think, lived in. So it had no indoor plumbing, no toilet, should I say. And then when I was about 3, the council had built a house for my parents just right beside this other house that we all moved into. So, so we lived there. And as I say, all my siblings, I'm the youngest of the 8. And so we had in this little house, we had my mum and dad, my granny in a room, and then 4 brothers in one room, the 4 girls in the other room. So we literally were packed. It was a little cottage, really, I would say. And then we had one other room. It was like a kitchen come dining room come sitting room. Everything else happened in that other room. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's the age range of your siblings?
Yeah, so I I'm obviously the youngest, and then my brother was a year older than me, but the oldest were twins and they were 11 years older. So yeah, my mum had them, and then she had another daughter a year after that, and then another child about a year and a half after that. So the first 4 came very quickly, and she was very busy.
I should think so. And what was your relationship like with your older siblings?
Yeah, I think I was babied, obviously, because I was a baby, and they would say I got away very lightly because all the jobs were taken up by them. But yeah, my brothers helped my dad particularly on the farm, and so it would have been busy. I mean, like, again, it was a small farm, but everything at that time was, we didn't have a lot of machinery. So a lot of things were done, you know, even moving cows from one field to another. It was a whole family were involved in that. It was busy, and, but we would have spent a lot of time together at the same time. We got on, I would say, pretty well, but like there was a lot of us in a small house. So it was, it had its challenges, absolutely had its challenges. I mean, I probably would have been closer to my sisters because they would have kind of been indoors, and we would have done probably more things helping my mum. But yeah, I think I tagged along a lot with what they were doing, maybe more than having my own jobs.
Yeah, that's good. And when did you go to school?
The interesting story to tell me that I started at 3 and a half for a few months, or I think it was for a week or two, to basically bolster the numbers, because it was a country school, and there was they were trying to have 2 teachers, so it was like the numbers were like there was like 20 or 30 pupils at different stages through the year. So I went just for a couple of weeks, I think it was, when I was 3 and a half, just to bolster the numbers. Then I started properly when I was 4 and a half, I think. So so again, it was a little kind of country school, and I started there when I was about 4 and a half. But I love school, because I think when my siblings obviously had all left, and it was very, very quiet at home. So I think I've always probably continued on to love school. That was where the action is.
So what was your home life like as a young girl living with your older siblings and your mum and dad and your granny? What was it like at home?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think we had an idyllic childhood in a lot of ways, living in the countryside. We had a lot of freedom and we were thrown out in the morning. Don't come back to lunchtime, you know, but we had the farm. We had like a hay shed and we'd the old house, as we called it, that we'd also be able to go in and play in. And we did our homework there as well. And then we just had miles and miles of countryside around us. So it was an idyllic childhood, I would say, in many respects. We spent a lot of time outdoors. And there was kind of like these old kind of monasteries very close to where we lived. And when we got a bit older, we were able to cycle there. And we had a lot of freedom because, again, everybody kind of knew each other. And so, you know, they'd see us going up the road and they'd be like, oh, there's Pat's kids. And they'd be watching out for us. So there was kind of like that kind of great kind of community feel. So everybody was watching out for other people's children. And yeah, so we would have, it was idyllic, I would say, in many respects. When I was a young child, I think as I got older, I was like, oh, we're so far from life. But when I was a child, I loved us. I loved us.
And what were your mum and dad like?
Yeah, they were just, I would say they were kind of salt of the earth. They were just very kind of practical people, very kind of hardworking, always busy. I think, I suppose, again, with, you know, eight children. And but they were always about because I suppose they both were around the farm. And so they were very present in our lives, I would say. And but yeah, they had a good relationship. And I would say for the most part, they had, a good relationship with us and, attentive and all that. Like they weren't, I would say, very kind of verbally demonstrative. They wouldn't have, been I love you and all that. They weren't that kind of people. I think of the generation, there were people didn't really express emotions or that, but they were very attentive to us. And they were very interested in us kind of getting out and getting on in the world. Yeah.
That's nice. Were they keen on you going to school and into education?
Yeah, I mean, they both would have left education at about the age of 14. So they had a short kind of schooling and that was kind of normal at that time, unless you were kind of very, I suppose, intelligent or very, gifted in some way, you would have had the opportunity to go further. But it was very common to go into a trade or something like that. And so my mum would have gone off and done, I think she tried working in a shop, but it didn't suit her, but she then went in with a nanny. So she was a living nanny for years before she got married. And then my dad, so they were very keen on school. They wanted us to do well in school and to have the opportunity. They didn't have a lot of money, but they were very keen for us to take up any opportunities kind of were there. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. And how did they meet? How did they get together?
Yeah, they met at a dance. So apparently they were at some kind of like social and my dad was going there to meet someone else. That's the story they told. And my mum said years later, but he met mum. And so they just hit it off. And this other woman was forgotten about. They hit it off. And I think they may have, mum was from, she had come to live in that area. So she originally was from the north, County Cavan. And her mum had died when she was quite young, nine. So she had actually moved down to live with some great aunts. And I so see. They were, my, her dad was, worked on the railway, but he was like a single man, like then obviously, or a widowed man. And so her and her siblings moved just to live with these great aunts who were quite, I think they were quite old, very strict. And so she moved down. So I don't know, did they know each other? They never really let on that they knew each other before they met, but maybe they knew of each other because she was from the village. Yeah, my dad obviously was from the countryside, but there's a good chance that they kind of knew of each other. But she had gone away then working. So I think they kind of not had a long distance relationship, but I think there was a bit of to and froing before things were settled.
Okay. Yeah. And how about religion? Was that important in your family?
We were brought up Church of Ireland, so that was unusual in some ways because I suppose the west of Ireland and in most of Ireland is quite Catholic, but we went to a primary school that was Church of Ireland, so I suppose it was there, it was part of our life. We went to church regularly. People thought we were very holy because we didn't have a car when we were younger, so we used to walk the 3 miles to church. So well, you can imagine 8 of us going down the road, we probably looked very holy, all out of the church. But I think it was a social, it was very much a strong kind of social network for my parents, and I think for our family, you know. There was a number in the area we're in, there's quite a lot of Protestants. And so that was probably something that was people moving into the same area maybe together. But yeah, so I think it was important socially, and it would have been something that we did our confirmation, and we would have been baptized in the church. It was part of our lives. My parents, I would have had a faith, you know, but I don't know that it was. I think that the community aspect of it was probably the central thing that was really important to them. But we did attend regularly when we were kids. Yeah.
And would you say that your family's social life was around that community and around the church?
It was, yeah, around that. And I think because a lot of the people that they lived close to us, like there would have been a strong sense of community if someone was doing something with the bog or with the hay or with something, people would have helped each other. So it was very much a sense of you know, that community involvement as well. And most of them we were related to probably in some way, in a distant way, you know. But there would have been things the church put on, like church fates where they were, or, you know, they had like a social dance that they put on to raise money for doing something in the church. And again, that would have been that same community kind of coming together. So it would have been, I would say, not so much around religion, but that kind of brought them together. It brought them together, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. And you said you went to a Church of England school, primary school.
Yes, Church of Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah. No problem. It was, Church of Ireland. And again, it was probably 5 minutes from our house walk. So it was out in the countryside. But again, this area, as I said, had a lot of Protestants in it. So it had been a small school that I think it opened in like 1916. It was kind of it just stuck with me just because of the date.
Yeah. But,
it was there, and we all attended that school. And again, it was like I think it was a one room school for a long time. And then it was a two teacher school. And in that, like we had both a Catholic and a Protestant teacher, you know. Again, that wasn't a big deal, but it was open to everyone. And there was some children that came out from the towns that maybe they felt they wanted something smaller. Maybe we had a number of children who had disabilities in the school. And I think, because again, it was just that it was a slower pace and something that they could, you know, maybe thrive in more, because there wasn't as many resources maybe at that time for.
Yeah. How about secondary school? Where did you go to secondary school?
Yeah, I went to a place called St. Patrick's College back in Cross. So that was where my siblings had gone. So you followed them. And it was a good distance away. So we had to get a public bus. And we used to actually cycle from the house about 20 minutes. And we used to leave our bikes in this house. At this house, I don't know how this arrangement came about, but we leave our bikes in this, and my siblings had done it, and it was no problem. But there was this kind of, I think he was kind of a little bit of a hermit maybe that lived in this house, and so he gave us no bother. We didn't bother him, he didn't bother us. I don't know how this arrangement came about, but I remember once I came back and my bike was gone, and he had gone to the shop on it, you know. And so but there was no sign of this man, and so I had to walk home. And I remember my dad had to go back and was banging on the door trying to get this guy, and we had to get the guards, you know, and they went looking for the bike, and it was a big drama. But it was we used to get this bus, and it was a long day, because when we got this bus, I had to leave early in the morning, and the bus used to do two runs, but it used to bring the kids from the town back first, and then we'd have to go after. And so it was a big, I think we used to get home around 5:30 or something after leaving, seven in the morning. So it was a long old day. But again, it was one of these schools out in the middle of nowhere that, you know, I think my parents picked probably because they felt going into a town was probably going to be more trouble maybe for getting into trouble. So everyone that got on well in there, so they sent us all there.
That's good. And what did you think of secondary school?
It was a massive, I would say, shock after being in such a tiny primary school. Like, my class in primary school was three people. But when I say that, we were at the teacher was teaching, I think, second class up to sixth. So she had maybe 20 students in the classroom, in the wider classroom, and we all played in the, you know, break times together. But I mean, you're talking about a school of maybe 30 students, and that in your class was possibly three times that, your year in secondary school. So, and you were moving from room to room, and taking all these new classes, and it was very overwhelming. But my brother, who was a year older than me, he wouldn't have been great. Like, he had a few kind of, I wonder now, has he dyslexia or something like that? I think at the time there was less understanding about that. They decided to keep him back a year. So we went to secondary school together. And so that was helpful in some ways, because we kind of had each other to, you know, launch around the school with. But you get to know people, and obviously you settle down. And I think having I had a sister there at the time. She was 3 years older than me, so she was there, and she was kind of a good support as well, just to kind of adjust. Right. Yeah. So, but so I loved
that school. Helped.
Yeah. I mean, school for me was, I just loved it. I love learning. And So
what did you like about learning and going to school?
I think it was just like it opened up the world. I mean, I suppose we did have a small little world where we were, but I think it just opened up the world to me. I found it very exciting. I love learning about history and what had happened in Ireland and around the world. And I loved just, like, I was really interested in science and learning about the body. I was fascinated by it all. And just like the world opened up when I was, and I still feel that way. Like, I just love learning. I think it's, yeah. And it was, yeah, just something I really enjoyed. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And were your mum and dad pleased with your attitude to school and your work at school?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't. Like, my mum, her kind of constant over the years was just do your best. There was no pressure on us to be academically brilliant by any means. She wanted us, obviously, to go out into the world and get a job and, you know, make a life for ourselves. But there was no there was no pressure. Like, I think we would have been, certainly they focused on our behavior. Like, they wanted us to be, you know, our please and thank yous. And, you know, that was really important, that we conducted ourselves in a kind of a appropriately or whatever. But they weren't very strict parents. And in terms of school, like, they did just want us to find something that we enjoyed and that we could kind of progress in. So they were, yeah, my mum, there would have been no major pressure, I think.
What was life like for you as you became a teenager?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a strange time. Like, my dad died when I was 13. So he had a number of health issues. And I think probably after the time, I would have realized how unpredictable that was, and how there was probably a few things when we were kids where he had like, you just, it's part of your life, so you just really don't know any different. He had diabetes, but insulin dependent diabetes. So we used to obviously be checking his blood sugars. And I remember I used to like mark out a page for him, like ruling out this page to that he could write his blood sugars on. But for the most part, he just seemed like, I mean, he was just our dad, and this was normal life. And it was funny, like, he used to have to eat regularly to obviously maintain his blood sugars. And I thought this was normal. We used to have like 11s and 3 o'clock snacks and all this. And we just thought this was a normal part of life. So, but I think, you know, when I look back now, there probably was signs that he wasn't well. There was episodes that he had that were, it was, you know, he was acting erratic because his blood sugars were kind of all over the place. And that had an impact on his heart. And then it was quite a sudden episode where he had, he had like a hernia that strangulated, which means it just kind of twisted on itself. And he went into hospital, and basically my mum went to visit him the next day. He had to go into an ambulance, went in the next day, and she came home. And in that period of time, he died. He had a heart attack, I think, or something. So it was a massive shock. Obviously, like, he just went off to the hospital. We got up one morning, and he wasn't there. And then the next day he was gone. So it was quite a shock. And I think it was something like that casts quite a shadow for years and years and years. And as I say, my mum, like, we wouldn't have been well off. My mum kind of didn't have a job outside the home. So it was, I think that certainly shaped what my teenage years were like. I was quite sensitive. So I was quite sensitive to kind of how my mum was. And, you know, like, my sister would have kind of I mean, I made friends, but she would have gone out and, you know, been at, doing the typical, she was, you know, asking for, I want a new thing, and she wanted to go here and there. But I was very conscious, oh gosh, you know, this is a lot of pressure on mum. And so it definitely shaped the way I was it through my teenage life, you know, really conscious of money. So in saying that, I did, you know, I think I was still kind of normal for most teenagers. You know, I met friends and you kind of get caught up in all that as well. So I think, yeah, entering the teenage years, starting secondary school, I would say a big shock. I was probably as tall as, I took this growth spurt in that summer. So I went from like just kind of average size to being like nearly 6 foot, I'd say, in first year in secondary school. So it was very awkward. I hadn't really grown into my body. So I was like tripping over my own feet, and probably got way more attention just because I stood out more, you know. But yes, it was an awkward, probably typical in many ways, awkward socially and awkward physically. And
Typical teenage. How about friends? Did you have friends locally? Did you have friends at school?
Yeah, I think at home, I would have had a few friends. But I think when you grow up in a big family, sometimes you have inbuilt friends, so you maybe don't make as much of an effort. So I would have had definitely other kids that I palled around with in primary school. And then because we all live so far away from each other, it would be other local kids that were within walking or cycling distance. So we definitely had that. But then you have your own family, and I had a couple of siblings that were close in age, so we kind of hung around together and did things together. And then in secondary school, I kind of had my own little group of friends, and some of them would have been kind of living near, and then some were quite far away because the school took in kind of kids really from a wide kind of distance. So yeah, I would have had some good friends. And like one of them now would have lived in a town, and she really, like, I would have gone and stayed with her, and that was probably the most exciting time of my teenage years, because she was the oldest of her family, and she had a lot of freedom. Parents gave her, you know, she helped a lot with them, so they were really good. So with her now, I would have had the experience of, you know, going to the discos and you know, underage drinking and you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I had some good friends in secondary school.
Well, that's good. Let's move on to the years sort of 15 to 25. When we say 15, is there anything that comes particularly to mind, any memory that comes to mind of being that age?
Yeah, I don't have a particular memory. I do remember, like, one of my friends, that girl that I was good friends with, she actually became pregnant that year. And so that was a bit of a shock to me. I was quite naive, actually. But, you know, so she went out of school. So I think when she, we would have been good friends, but when she, and I would have done a lot of things with her, but when she left school, I think I probably focused back more on education then. I kind of, you know, I think you were coming into the kind of leaving cert cycle as well, the kind of latter half part of school life. So I started to really kind of think, you know, not that she kind of was bringing me on a bad path or anything like that, but I think she was the one that probably, you know, was bringing me a lot of fun into my life. But I was back to probably being a bit more serious and head down. And we were kind of, they're challenging you to think about what are you going to do with your life. And so I don't have probably really any strong memories. I mean, like, again, we would have gone to some, you know, local discos, and some of those things were great fun and great, very, very innocent in a lot of ways. Like nowadays, there probably is a lot more, you know, people with drink and with all sorts of different things. Like there was, but we were, I think the way we were brought up, we were quite cautious, all of us, about that type of thing. I think when you're kind of in away from a town, it's you're kind of counseled against a lot of that stuff, you know. So I would be very cautious, and I think the friends that I had would have also been that way. So it was great fun, and we went and we danced our hearts out, but there was none of that kind of side of things, really, that much of that when I was around that age, you know.
Yeah. And tell me what the discos were like. What sort of music were you into at that time?
I was big into pop music, but it would have been just like we loved Top of the Pops. So we used to watch that every weekend, me and my sister. And my sister particularly, she even now, she's just way more tuned into the bands. Like I would just like the kind of, I'd know the song and I might know all the words of the song, but I wouldn't be able to tell you who sang it. So I was terrible that way. But she was, our whole bedroom was covered. The walls were covered with posters of, you know, different bands. But I would have been just like, I like this song and I like that song and whatever. And she was the one. So I remember I did love, I loved actually kind of like solely R&B type music, like Boys to Men. I loved all the boy bands. It's very embarrassing to say, but yeah, everyone was into them.
We're young.
yeah. You can forgive me for because I was young, but yeah, the boy bands. I loved all the boy bands. And I think that Irish band, Westlife. I can't remember the name. Anyway, they were like, there was a number of young bands like that coming up at that time. But I would have grown up with a real range of music because I suppose my parents listened, they had country music on in the house, but then all of my siblings, because of the different ages, we just had every sort of music, and they were big into like ABBA. And so I would have loved everything that they loved. I was listening to, they probably commandeered the radio, to be honest. So I kind of liked all the kind of, I would say, call them nearly classics now, like Michael Jackson. And, you know, I loved all the ballads. And but there was no, I mean, I loved music, but at the same time, I was and still am terrible at kind of remembering the names. And
me. And what happened at the discos?
Yeah, they were, again, I mean, in my mind, they were extremely innocent. They were just like, really, we would go as a group of friends. And I mean, there was all this kind of thing, like, will you shift my friend and all this, like there was all that kind of thing going on, but it was extremely innocent. Like they were run by the, I think they were actually possibly run by the church. Like, I think that like people from the church put them on. They knew that it would be good for the kids to have something. And so they would start at maybe like 7:30, 8 o'clock and be done by like, you know, 10 or 10:30, you'd be hardly dark. But they would, like, they'd be very strict about drink. Like, they would be, obviously, there would be loads of chaperones. But at the same time, you know, it was very naive and it was just really having a good bit of crack and the dancing. We'd be dancing and, you know, sweating, and it was great crack. And you'd just be having, like, dance-offs with other people and that kind of thing. But it was all very, very innocent, in my mind anyway.
Okay. Going back to your friend who became pregnant, what did you think of that at the time, and how did others react?
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit shocked because I think I was quite naive when it came to sex and things like that. Like, my mom was old school, and like, she had me when she was 40. So like, she had kind of had the conversations, I think, with my older sisters, but she kind of left it for them to talk to me about things like that. And so they, like my parents, they would have been quite prudish and wouldn't have talked about anything like that. So, I mean, I mean, you grow up on a farm, you're kind of exposed to a certain amount of, you know, what happens between animals and all that kind of thing. But, you know, if there was kissing on the telly, my parents would have turned it over or, you know, told us not to look or that kind of thing. We were, you know, so I think she had a boyfriend, and in some ways it didn't surprise me because she was very, you know, in love with this guy and all this kind of thing. But I mean, I was shocked, I suppose, because she was so young, and I suppose I didn't see it coming. But like, if I think about it now, her mother was allowing her to go away on weekends with this guy. So I mean, if I had thought about it, but I think I was just so innocent. I was so innocent. For me, she didn't live close by, so I didn't get to see her much. But like, I didn't think any different of her. I think we weren't brought up to be very judgmental. I mean, my parents, I had an auntie who was quite, you know, she'd always be making remarks about different things, but my mum wasn't really like that. And I think just because of her own life and her own experiences of life, she was quite generous towards other people and quite kind. And so and she wouldn't have said, you can't, you know, see that girl anymore. So there was none of that. But I think there was definitely an attitude with some people in school, which was interesting. You know, I mean, I couldn't tell you what they were doing, but I'm sure that like none of them were as innocent as maybe they let on. But There was definitely an attitude towards some of them, but she went, came back to school, which was great. So she, her parents, she stayed at home at the beginning after having her baby. And so I think she took a year out because even it just was easier to just kind of set everything up and whatever. But it just meant she then missed, obviously she wasn't in the same class as us, but she did come back, which was great, and finished school, which was, yeah, which was great.
And how about you and your first boyfriends and
that
type of thing?
Yeah, I think, again, I was very innocent. I was in love with the idea of being in love. But then I think I was quite a serious, you know, I think maybe because of my dad dying, but I don't know. I think it was just kind of the way I was. I think I probably around that time, maybe it was a while after she wasn't in school, there was a female minister actually in the Church of Ireland. And so she kind of was, this was, again, a very unusual thing. I think she was one of the first female ministers in Ireland, I think. And she was lovely and just really down to earth, but really wanted young people to be involved in the church. So she got us kind of involved in kind of youth stuff. And there was like a youth camp on that the Church of Ireland put on. And so she was trying to get us kind of connected into that. So I think I started getting involved in stuff like that. And I think it wasn't like I wasn't looking to have a boyfriend or I wasn't looking. It was just that this took up my time. And it was a brilliant opportunity because you got to go different places. And again, I think my mum didn't drive. We had a car, I think, that my brother had got at one point. So we did have a car, probably when I was in my teenage years that my brother had. And so he would bring us the odd place. But well, we were quite isolated. And I think particularly in my teenagers, I did find that a challenge. But this was a great opportunity. Like we were going to another part of Mayo and meeting new people. And that, I think, probably was a big part of my teenage years, where I just was focused on that. And we were given different responsibilities. We were actually organizing some of these trips, me and my sister. That took up probably a lot of, and we met lots of different people. So I think, it wasn't kind of a conscious thing. When I was friends with that girl, Siobhan, we would have gone out and, there would have been, oh, his friend likes you and all this. And, there'd be like innocent, like kissing and that kind of thing, but it wasn't ever very serious. It was, you'd be meeting up together and as a group and maybe going off to one of these discos or something like that. But it wasn't something I was kind of looking for, and it wasn't something that played a big part in my mind, I suppose. I was very excited about these opportunities I was getting.
That sounds good. How did you get on at school with your leaving cert and afterwards?
Yeah, I think I was very confused about what to do. I had no idea. I couldn't determine what it was that I was interested in or what I should do. And my mum, she brought me to this. I mean, I love learning. So I was kind of like, well, I like this and I like that. And it was all very, very hard to pin me down. But my mum brought me to this. I don't know. They were like kind of a career guidance person and they did some kind of like aptitude test. And I remember going to their house and it was like a series of questions and they read it and at the end and kind of said, well, look, these are the directions you should think about going in. And so it was like the guards or like nurse senior. It was all about kind of service. I always liked helping people. And so that was kind of the direction that they guided me in. And I really like science and I was doing biology for my leadership. So then I decided that I would try for nursing. And so the Church of Ireland, at the time there was a hospital in Dublin, the Adelaide Hospital, which was the Church of Ireland Hospital. And so you could apply to go in through their program. Now, it ended up that when I started with them, I did go and have an interview with them. And again, you have another aptitude test. At that stage, were amalgamating with another, because it was quite a small place and the hospital itself was quite run down. So at the time, Talla Hospital was being built and the Meath Hospital and the Adelaide, they both moved out there as well as a children's hospital. And so they went into this new building and we went in together as students. But that's where I kind of, I would say I was an average student. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed study, but I wouldn't say I was brilliant at it either. But I did enough to get into this course and sold myself on these interviews, whatever I had to do.
Yeah. And how old were you at the time?
Yeah, so I actually started my training then when I was 17. So
well, you're much young.
Yeah. So I at the time there was no they have now a transition year, so you do that between the two exams, and so they were just starting to bring that in, but it wasn't in our school, and so I went directly from like the junior cert exams into the leaving cert cycle, which was at that time only 2 years then. So I did my leaving cert when I just turned 17 and started the course then in that September. So yeah, I was very young.
And that's a big step for someone who's been living on a farm in County Mayo, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, because I had done those kind of youth club and the things, I had actually met a lot of people from around Ireland, because we did it locally and then they connected us in with groups that were doing it at a kind of national level. So at that point, we had kind of come up to Dublin and met other people from around Ireland and brought groups from Mayo and Galway up to Dublin, and we had done trips with them. And so so that was helpful, and I had a sister in Dublin, so that was also helpful because
that's good.
Yeah, now I didn't live with her, but I went to college in Talla and lived there my first year, and she lived in Talla, so it was a good kind of bridge into the big bad world. And Talla is it's not a terrible place by any means, but it's a rough enough place. Like it has, you know, parts of it are quite run down and quite have a lot of social problems. So,
right.
I mean, it was eye-opening. Eye-opening.
So tell me what it was like then as a young 17-year-old. It was eye-opening. In what way?
Yeah, I think the way people spoke, it seemed like they spoke very roughly or something. But I mean, that's just like the Dublin accent in some respects. And just, I remember like coming up with my mum for, this was, I think we had to look for accommodation. And the college, like the hospital, had assigned someone to help us. And so they had a property and we were going to go there or whatever. But I remember my mum just staring at somebody, and they were giving us these dirty looks, and I think they even shouted something at us, and I was like, this is not a friendly place, you know. So it was very, very different. I mean, I think where we were, it wasn't diverse at all. I mean, obviously you had Catholics and Protestants, and you were aware of that difference. You had the people from the countryside and the people from the town. And that was probably it. We had like a basketball team locally, and they had a black basketball player. And there was literally that black basketball player and the black window cleaner. That literally was the two, you know, so there was no diversity. And you're moving to a place that has huge amount of diversity, and hospital itself had doctors, nurses from all over the world. So, I mean, you're right into diversity, but we weren't used to that at all. And,
so what did you think meeting, coming across people that you hadn't met before or didn't know anything about them? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit scary. It was a little bit scary. I think I was quite shy and quiet person, you know, but I would kind of take it all in. But I think, again, my mum's attitude was, she was, when I think about it now, I was very fortunate because she was very open-minded. And I suppose I didn't maybe recognize that at the time, but she was curious about people. And like, while people might have found her strange looking at them, she would just sit down and talk to anybody and just, you know, engage in a conversation. And she would just take everybody as they were. So she, in that way, I think I didn't realize that I was open-minded myself. I think I was influenced by her. And so, and then you're kind of relying on each other a lot. And so in terms of the hospital, you know, I met a lot of people from other countries, and you're respectful of them because they actually know stuff and you don't, or they're the doctor, or, you know, you're there, maybe your senior nurse that's, you know, guiding along. So I think those experiences were very helpful. Very quickly you kind of have an open mind towards the fact these people maybe look different or talk a bit different, but they're just kind of on the same path as you.
All right. And were you the last child to leave home, or were there any siblings still at home when you left Dublin?
Yes. Who was there now? My sisters had all moved out, and one of my brothers had moved out at that point. But then before I left, I kind of was like, I was in two minds about leaving for college. Part of me was really eager to get out into the world. And then there was a part of me that kind of was thinking about my mom, because I was the only girl there at that point. And I was really conscious of her, you know, with the boys were just different. It's a different relationship. But my sister, one of my sisters had moved back to the area and actually moved back home in and around that time. So she was at home, and three of my brothers with my mom, yeah, in this little house. But anyway, they were happy there for years. So, but I moved on, and I was delighted. I was very eager, I think, to just get out and experience more of the world. And
that's good. Tell me what life was like as a trainee nurse in Dublin at that time.
Yeah, it was changing at that time. There was a lot of changes in nursing. They were trying to make it kind of elevated to be a more professional, to be seen as a profession. So at the time, we were a transitionary group. So as I say, the hospitals were amalgamating, and in that time, they were also changing a lot of things. So our uniform reflected the two hospitals, but it was a tunic and trousers, whereas at the time, they were still wearing dresses in the other hospitals. And some of the people who were when we were on the wards, they were wearing dresses. So the Adelaide had it like apparently a uniform where it was a dress and an apron and hat and puffy sleeves and all this kind of thing. And that was just literally the year or two before us, you know. Nursing was very much in a transition period. And we were the first kind of group, I think this maybe the first or second year of a group that was going to the university for some of our lectures. Right. So they were really trying to move towards kind of like a research-based, you know, model of care. You know, they had like, you know, a lot. There was other people finishing their training that were using the old methods, you know, the old training. So it was a very interesting kind of time. Even by the time I finished, they were bringing in something new again, because we were kind of like this testing and trying in our group. But we spent 2 days off campus. So we were based mainly in the hospital, and we had a kind of a big lecture hall in the hospital. But we would have had our lunches with the other staff members. So you were very much felt like you were immersed in it from the word go. And then we spent 2 days in the college. So the college we were assigned to was or connected with was Trinity College at the time. And so we actually spent 1 day there and 1 day in a different hospital. Sorry. So we went to a different education centre in another hospital, which was also connected to Trinity. So it was like for us, I suppose we just were going through this process. But they were very much in a transition period and really trying to elevate, and have nurses seen as the professionals, and with, you know, the work that they were doing, you know, kind of seen as in its professional capacity. And there was a lot of, I would say there was tensions, you know, like we, at the time when we first went out on placements, you know, there was managers. So they had like the title clinical nurse manager, but there was other that still wanted to be called sister, because again, most of the hospitals were run by nuns. Now these people weren't even nuns, but because that was the title that was handed over to those that were in charge, they would wear the old garb, and they were really kind of still, you know, flying the flag for the old way. And I remember, you know, some of the issues that would, like, you would be called, maybe they'd shout your name from the other end of the corridor. There was a lot of keeping you and putting you in your place with certain people. And I remember being asked to bring someone a glass of milk and to make sure it was on a saucer with a doily. And I just remember thinking, like, they must be off their head. Where will I find a doily? So I was trying to get this up to the person without knowing I was never going to find a doily. Like, this hospital was not equipped with doilies. And so you had things like that. And there was one kind of matron, we called her, that she used to measure the sides of the you know, how the blanket would fall. You had to have it exactly the same length. So you had some of that really old school, and then you had some younger managers. So it was an interesting time. It was kind of a transition period. There was a lot of growing pains, and obviously there was a big change for them because they were moving from other buildings.
Absolutely.
And frankly amalgamate. So but for me, it was again, I just thought it was very exciting. I think when you go from,
like, enjoyed it.
Yes, yeah. Now, it was terrifying. I found it quite intimidating, and I would always be getting things wrong. So I would, again, you're just naive. You think, oh, I'll just go and talk to somebody, and you think, you know, I'll just chat away with them. And the older people especially would love to see a young person coming in, and they'd be chatting away to you. But you'd get in trouble because maybe they were gasping for breath, and you just wouldn't recognize it. You wouldn't notice those kind of things. Like, you were just so naive. So I was very green, and I spent a lot of time in the linen closet. That's where you'd hide if you didn't know what you were doing. So you'd just go in there for a breather, and just because if you were out there, you had to look busy. And it was very much that mindset, which I'm sure it is still there, that you don't stand around. There was no standing around. You should always be doing something. That was sometimes you didn't know what you should be doing. So but, I enjoyed it. And I think certainly as time went on, they had good supports. It was a very good program, and there was obviously a lot of younger people. You know, when I say younger, they were just of a different mindset, a new mindset, involved in the education. And they had a program where they had like somebody that would come onto the wards, and like, they were tough out now, I have to say. Like, I mean, a lot of people who were involved in kind of that level of nursing have stuck at it for that long. It is very much a tough love kind of it's tough love, yeah.
And you completed your training and qualified?
I did in general nursing, yeah. And I stayed on in that hospital then for a couple of years. So I reached the end. It was 3 years of study. At the time, it was called a diploma in nursing. And we had like 2 weeks holidays in the summer and 2 weeks at Christmas. So it was 3 years continuous kind of. And so we packed a lot in, and the training was absolutely amazing. Like, I really, really did love it, because you went on these, you had your placements each year, but then you had secondments. So we went to like the maternity hospital and spent 3 weeks there. We went out to the community. For me, it was very exciting. You got to see it was so diverse. You realized it was quite a diverse job to be in. You went to theatre, so you really got the full experience. It was very well put together.
Oh, that's good.
Quite supported, and yeah. I finished that, and I stayed on then for a little while in the hospital, in that hospital after the training.
Okay. And what was your life like outside the hospital and outside the study? Where were you living? What were you doing?
Yeah, so the first year I lived with other people that were on the course. And so it was really like, the group of people who came from the countryside. So they put us all, many of us, I think there was maybe two or three houses like that. So there was six of us in the house. And then I suppose as time went on, you got to know people. So I made good friends with a girl. And then I lived with her in the next year. And she was actually from Limerick. She was in Dublin. She's on the course. But her good friend had also moved up, and she was doing a course. And then we also had her sisters moved up. So it was kind of like I moved in with them, and they were kind of like a unit in their own right. But they just took me in, and I, over the years, there was a group of us that kind of moved into different places. So you were constantly moving, trying to afford the rent, find somewhere maybe slightly better to live. Some of the living, the places we lived were shocking. One of them now has had a terrible mouse problem. And it was brilliant location. It was very close to the city, but they were doing a lot of works in that area. And so these mice were coming in through the bathroom, and we couldn't get it. I mean, it was terrible. We lived there for about, I think, 10 months. And what happened in the time that we were there, there was like the landlord died. So the landlady obviously was just not in on the planet. Like, so we didn't want to keep pushing her to do things, but at the same time it was an awful situation. We endured it for as long as we could until we found somewhere different. But we had brilliant times. They were absolutely lovely, like, girls, and we got on great. And they had then their other groups of friends. They knew different people. So I suppose at that time, religion was a big part of my life. And I think it was something that kind of, when I was a teenager, it would have become more meaningful for me, because I think I was looking for something maybe to kind of lean on as well. And I, as I say, I was kind of serious, and I think I thought about the world a lot. And then with what happened with my dad and everything, I you know, I wasn't happy with just kind of, you know, breezing through life. So this kind of having a sense of purpose and having a story to live by and all that was very appealing to me. So this was also important to them. But so I wouldn't say it would have been the central thing, but it would have been something that tied us together, definitely.
Would you be attending church regularly or be part of a church group?
At that time, yeah, I would have attended regularly. And it would sometimes be, we'd go somewhere that they knew people and that kind of thing. So it wouldn't necessarily be in the same place. Again, I suppose that's the thing when you're young, and there was all these different youth things that were happening, or young adults things. And so you'd sometimes be attending things like that. But we had like a kind of a big group of people. And again, many of them kind of with similar, you know, faith would have been one of the connecting points. And so like at one point we lived in a house, there was 11 of us, I think. And again, somebody knew somebody, and it was their grandmother's house, and she was now in a nursing home. And this was this big sprawling house. And there was 11 of us, even a married couple living with us at the time, who had come from South Africa. So it was very diverse kind of a group. And there was these girls from Limerick, and then a couple of girls from Dublin. And then over the years, people were starting to get married. And so, you know, they'd be replaced by somebody else. It was lovely. We'd like cook our meals together, and, you know, we plan holidays together. I suppose with them now, I would have had my first kind of, we didn't really have family holidays. I think we lived in the countryside, so I suppose maybe my parents thought we had enough going on, but they didn't have the money, so we never really went abroad. And so we went on holiday, a couple of us, and we went to Turkey, I think it was, and it was very, you know, so it was an exciting time. And
what was it like going abroad for the first time and having a holiday like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was unprepared for the heat. I mean, like, it sounds so cliche, but like, it's like you're not built for it when you're brought up in, you know, the moody weather of Ireland. Yeah, I mean, they love the heat, they love sunbathing. I wasn't so much enamored with that. I was kind of like, let's go for a walk, let's go and see what's happening down here. But you know, you temper yourself to go along with but it was, I think it was it seemed the most exotic place in the world. I mean, it was, when I think of it now, it was a package holiday. It was fairly standard in many respects. There was a strip of shops and a strip of restaurants, and probably could be found anywhere in the world. But it was very exotic in that, just, I mean, the smells, the food, the just the type of things we're selling in the shops, the apple tea. There was all the Turkish delight that you could find. But it wasn't like Turkish delight with chocolate on it. It was Turkish delight, you know, that big fat balls of this Turkish delight. So, it was, and the music and everything about it was just, yeah, amazing.
How old were you at the time when you went on this holiday?
I'd say now it was before most of those girls got married. So I'd say I was probably 19 or 20. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was, yeah, it was very exciting. And we were very innocent. We were really kind of quite an innocent bunch. You know, there wasn't much drinking or carousing or that kind of thing, but we just had great fun together.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
You mentioned that some of the girls started to get married.
Yeah.
What was happening in your own life at that time? Mm-hmm. In terms of love life, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever.
Yeah, I think I was like, I was very focused on my job and that took up a lot of my time. And then I would have had these friends. And I mean, like that, I think there's people that you kind of like, oh, he's nice and all this. But because we had a large group of friends, I think like that, you got to know people and then you'd start having, you know, you'd have people over for dinner or that kind of thing. But no, I didn't. And I was thinking about this the other day, but I there was no sense of like I was missing out then thing. I think I was just enjoying. I think because I probably was so sheltered, everything was such an incredible experience. It was all life seemed like such an adventure at that time. And
that's lovely.
Yeah, it was just, I think we like going on your first holiday at that time and getting to live with your friends and you're making dinner together. And it was really quite a lovely time, but very innocent in a lot of ways. I mean, I think some of the girls were a little bit older, but even at that, like some of them that were even my age, they were meeting. But I suppose I wouldn't have been against it. I just don't think I found anyone that caught my eye or anything. And then I think I was involved in, I became involved in a church, and it was just everything was a new experience. So I just get caught up in that, and I wasn't particularly looking for it. And I think maybe because I wasn't going out and that side of things, there wasn't much happening in my love life.
As if you were very busy.
Yeah, I was busy, and it was just full of friendship, I suppose, more than romantic relationships. Yes. I think.
Yeah. And did you get to go home very often, or was that just left for Christmas visits?
Yeah, it wasn't very often. Now, at the beginning, when I first moved up, I had my first mobile phone. But I remember that I would hardly use it because I would be afraid people weren't really texting each other all the time. It was more about having it for calls. So I do remember being extremely homesick my first year. And so I knew my mom was like, well, look, if you want to come home, like I'd be bringing her and I'd be crying and all this kind of thing. But I just felt like if I go back, I won't come out again. I just had a very strong sense. So I didn't go home a lot the first year. I felt like I nearly need to stay away or something.
Yeah.
Plus, there wasn't a lot of money. We got a small grant from the college, and they gave us our uniform and our books, and they, you know, you had a food pass, so there was lots of other kind of perks. Mm-hmm. But we had very little actual cash. So, you know,
Did you receive any salary?
No.
Really?
No, not for the 3 years. So that was another thing that has come since. But yeah, at that time it was, you would have blocks of time where you're on the ward. So maybe 6 weeks, and they would like, you certainly would have been working, but you weren't included in the numbers. You were an extra. Yeah, and as you went on, obviously you were doing way more and given way more responsibility. But no, there was no payment, and that's something they've changed. But at the time, it was like they were just trying to make these strides to see it, for it to be recognised as a professional profession, and that it was research based, and that, you know, they were making strides all the time in terms of the education and establishing that kind of respect for that profession. But yeah, no, there was no cash.
How did you survive in terms of paying rent and paying for food and day to day things?
I don't know. I think we like in the first year, like if I went home to Mayo, I'd come back with bags of food. Like, so my mother would give me that kind of thing, and she might give me a little bit of money, but she didn't have money. She didn't have money to give. So now my sister, who was in Dublin, she was working away. She had her own business at that point, so she would give me money the odd time. But people were very good, and they were very conscious. I think, you know, say some of these friends that I got to know who had maybe parents in Dublin, they'd invite you over for a dinner. And we had this food pass that you could get your dinner in the hospital. And the first year we lived within walking distance, so I used to just go there at the weekend and just eat my dinner. And then you would just get, you know, maybe like noodles, or you'd get something. I remember, like, I used to have maybe toasted sandwiches every day for the week, you know, so I'd just get a pack of ham, pack of cheese and bread, and that's what you need for the whole week outside of eating the meals in the hospital. So it was fairly rough, like, but you just thought, this is just the way it works, you know. I didn't go out a lot because you didn't have the money. But some of the girls I lived with in first year, they got jobs as kind of care assistants in, say, a nursing home or something like that. And they would go out a lot more because they had money to do it. But I was kind of reluctant, I think, in the first year or two, because it was a big adjustment for me. So I felt I didn't want to also add in, you know, working as well. So I just made do. And so it was like stretching a penny, basically.
Yeah, definitely. But you eventually were employed by them and paid a salary.
Exactly, yes, yeah. And honestly, I probably still lived like a pauper at the beginning because I wasn't used to spending money. So even some people, to the point that some people commented, like, your shoes are falling apart, you need to buy a new pair of shoes. But I think I was just used to kind of stretching things and just making do and that kind of thing. But yeah, I did feel like I'd won the lotto when I... because it seemed like a lot of money. And it was great. We worked shift work. So we did generally did 3 days a week, 12 hours, which was generally 13, maybe 14 hours. But you would do the 3 days. And then when we were staff nurses, we would have to do nights. So at the time they did seven nights. That was the way. And then you'd have a week off. So, I mean, I hated nights. It was... I couldn't adjust to the schedule. I couldn't sleep. I found it very difficult when you were living with other people and they're obviously on a different and they're making noise and all that kind of thing. So it was tricky. I didn't enjoy that at all. But the wages were great when we got them in the end. And like that, planning on holidays and going to the cinema and just going out for dinner or things like that with friends, which was lovely.
Yeah. How long did you stay in nursing after qualifying in Dublin?
I was a couple of years in nursing, and then I got to a point, I think there was I wouldn't say that I ever really dealt with my dad dying, because when he died, my mum just did not want to talk about it ever again. And that was kind of probably common enough that people just, that's, you know, maybe how they coped with, maybe because of her own grief or as a child, I don't know. She never wanted to talk about dad again. And so that was quite difficult. And I found it difficult at the time. And we had a few arguments about it, but then you just respect she's not going to talk about this thing. But when I was a couple of years into nursing, I remember I was still very young, like maybe 22. And I was looking after this lady. And I think it was kind of the thing that pushed me over a bit of an edge. She was... Her children were kind of my age. Now, it was nothing like my own father's situation, but I think it really brought up all that emotion. She was dying. She had cancer. They were coming in. They were devastated. And I became very, I found it very difficult, and I started not coping very well in work. So I remember being brought in by the manager, and just she was trying to figure out what was going on. And so I then decided that I would take some time out of nursing. So I'd say I was probably working maybe 2 or 3 years at that stage. And I was devastated because I think, you know, it's like my first failure, maybe, where you just feel like this is the thing you've been working so hard on. And I was quite serious. I've always been quite serious. So I think I kind of was quite hard on myself. But I remember talking to one of my friends, and she was the sister of the girl that I was kind of had gotten to know through the course. And she was always the one I'd go to. She was kind of the wiser, older one. But she said, well, why don't you just try something else for a little while? And so I actually got a job in a creche working with babies. And I did that for a year. And that was, I'd say, when I was, I was probably about 23 or something at the time.
Right. Okay.
And, yeah, so I worked there for a year and just took a break from nursing. And it was great. It was just like, I at the time I was part of a church, and I remember again talking to someone, and they said, look, it sounds like you need to maybe talk to a counselor or whatever. And again, that would probably have been, I wouldn't have said it would be like taboo, but it wasn't, I wouldn't say the norm, you know, in Ireland. And I mean, for some people, it's still taboo to go to a counsellor, but nobody in my family had gone to a counsellor. And I'd never really heard anyone talking about this. So again, there was a lot of shame, I think, at the time for me, but I found it immensely helpful. I found it.
Well, that's good.
Brilliant. Because I think you just sort out some of the things in your own head and your feelings, all that kind of thing. So that year then was, I took that time out, and then I decided, a lot of my friends, as I said, were getting married, and I was feeling that because, you know, some of these I'd lived with for years, and I was going to all these weddings, and I had, one of the things that I had loved was within the church was these stories of missionaries. So I started thinking about that, and decided during this year that I would love to go and do something like that. So I then was in contact with this person who, I don't know if you've heard of Samaritan's Purse, but anyway, it's a charity. They do kind of these shoe boxes at Christmas, and they send them to children. But they also do these trips where they go to a place and maybe do something practical. So I was talking to them, and they about seriously going for a time. And so in the end, I there was a couple of places in mind. But what we organized was that I would go to Russia. So then, after that year, then I went to Russia for 6 months.
Did you? And what was that like?
Oh, gosh. Again, an amazing experience. I mean, I look back, I probably look back at this time in my life and say how naive I was. But you're so naive thinking you're going to save the world. You're going to change everything. All this kind of youthful enthusiasm. It was very, I mean, obviously, I had very limited Russian. I had done a course, like something like a 10-week introduction to the language, which was helpful because I was able to read the script, which is obviously a different alphabet to the Roman alphabet. And so I could read signs. So that was very helpful. I could say hello. But I mean, you're really only touching the surface, you know, of it. So I went over to an organization over there. So it was one that this man had recommended. He had a connection with them. They were happy to kind of support me, and I'd work with them and that kind of thing. And so it was very different to what I expected. I had these ideas of going and working in an orphanage and this kind of thing. The work that they did was kind of a little bit more removed from that. They did work with orphans, but they would have distributed some of these shoeboxes. And so they organized a lot of events with churches. And it was an amazing experience. I mean, they organized like camps for children who were in orphanages. And I suppose different to here, we'd have foster families and stuff like that. They would have orphanages, and that's how they kind of dealt with some of the social issues and breakdowns in families and all that kind of thing. So I went, and I was kind of, there was a doctor that worked for them, and I would work with her, and I was in the medical block, and we'd kind of look after the children and take care of any of them that were sick and do some health checks, and we used to check them for fleas when they come in, and the head lice and all sorts of like that. But we had like, we'd have the same group of kids for like 2 weeks, and they would partner a lot with other countries. So there was a lot of English speaking people actually came there. I think one of the trips I did with one of the camps was just solely Russians. So that was different as well, because obviously the communication was very limited. So you had a few we didn't have translators, but you had some people who spoke English. But then the other trips were with people who were, there was an American team that came over, there was an English team that came over, and they would just run these trips, pay for everything, and work with maybe some Russian people as well. And most of my time was spent in Moscow. So I stayed with one of the people from this charity at the beginning, but she lived outside Moscow. So they were just kind of trying to organize something. And I lived then with this young girl for a while, but she spoke no English, I spoke no Russian, so it was quite a challenge. She had a whole wall basically of words, translations. But we lived together for probably 2 weeks, I think it was, maybe 3 weeks. So my first month was kind of shifting around. And then what's very common there is that you would have a lot of the older people would have like what they call a dacha, which is like a house out in the countryside, and they would then go out there for the whole summer. So that happened, and I think I went over in the March or something. And by the time, anyway, this lady was moving out to the summer house, and I stayed in her apartment for the four and a half, five months maybe. And so I lived on my own then, which actually suited me really well. I now know I'm an introvert, but at the time I was like, I really appreciated just, it was overwhelming experience, just constantly like not understanding people.
Yeah.
Trying really hard to understand people, trying to pick up through non-verbal communication what's happening.
Such a big thing.
So it was quite a challenge, but so you'd have to, I'd get the metro there on my own, and I mean that in itself was an experience. But you know, you adjust and you get used to, develop a little routine. But it was an amazing experience, and the things that they had me do, like they sent me off as their representative to a youth conference in Latvia. I mean, I just find it hilarious. I'd say I was only there a month or something with them, and they sent me off as their representative, the Russian representative. So I don't think they had anyone to send, maybe, but so I mean, it was completely outside the box. It was outside my comfort zone, but I was there to be challenged. I was there to kind of have an experience of something different, and I got it.
That's amazing. How do you think that that affected you, that whole period and experience, that, you know, that range of challenges and experience, how did it affect you?
Yeah, I think I suppose in one way it gave me a confidence that I could do things, you know, because you survived this really challenging experience. When I came back, I had reverse culture shock, I think, and I did find it an adjustment to settle back in, because I think you're not even necessarily seeing normal life over there. You're seeing kind of extremes. You're seeing people who are maybe the impoverished people, because that's what their focus was. You're seeing people who, like the children, that some of them that were quite disturbed by, you know, being, so they had, like, I remember we did some work with orphans, and I learned, you know, there's like kind of tiers in within tiered system in the orphanage. And so some children would never be shown for adoption because of the issues they had. So they had like this grading system, and, you know, finding out some of that stuff, I think it really affected me how I viewed the world. I think I suppose I had my own harsh experience of life, you know, like losing a parent. But I think you're just seeing it reinforced some of that, how unfair, how unjust. I was very kind of tuned into that kind of thing afterwards. And it definitely, I mean, I was part of a church, I'd say, when I came back, before I went and when I came back, that was very much in a disadvantaged area. And that, so I think that really, I was very geared towards like helping other people, and that kind of reinforced that. Definitely shaped my view about not just kind of living for my own benefit. I was very much geared towards seeing the problems of the world and not being able to overlook them.
And so what did you do when you returned to Ireland after that intense experience?
I stayed with a friend of mine for about a couple of weeks, and then I moved in with another friend. So I'd say the first 2 months I just adjusted back, and they were so good. Like, there were two families that I would have lived with them at different points earlier before. Well, in one case, the South African couple, they actually were married when they lived with us, but they had gone on to have children. And then this other friend who had got married or whatever. So they were very, very kindly took me in, allowed me to just, and then at that point, I kind of knew I needed to get back out and kind of working, and I had no income at that point. So, you know, they were very gracious, but you're kind of like, you know, you can't bleed this dry. I didn't consider, I think, moving back to Mayo, because I suppose you didn't feel there was really opportunities there. I then started working for an agency, a nursing agency, and I moved in with a girl, again, someone that knew somebody and knew of this opportunity. So she lived fairly close to Dublin City, and so I moved in with her, rented a room off her, and we got on well, and she was kind of very easygoing, so it was great. You know, she was very, you know, it was a very relaxed house, which was great, because, you know, I was still adjusting, but it was great. I love the agency work because, again, it was diverse, and you didn't have to deal with any of the politics, because there's a lot of that in a lot of jobs, and there's certainly that in nursing. So, so I did that then for a couple of years.
And so by this time, would you be mid-20s?
Yeah. I think I was... when I came back, I think I was I think I was 24 when I went over that 6 months. And it was during that time that I, so prior to that, the person who became my husband, I got to know him.
Right.
And so when I was away in Russia, he was just, lots of people were like, yes, of course, we'll email you and we'll keep in touch and all that kind of thing. But he was one of those people that actually did.
Oh, right.
So we would have just been kind of on friendly terms. He was in that church that I was part of. And we got close, you know, just kind of during that time. He was very friendly, just kind and stuff like that. But we got to know each other well. And then, you know, we kind of connected to them when I came back. But yeah, it was a big adjustment when I came back. But I think then settling back into nursing, even though I hadn't done it for those year and a half, 2 years, it just was, again, so familiar after.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a world I knew, and it was one that you could just adjust back into. And
yeah. So how would you describe yourself at that stage? The experience of losing your father, nurse training, Russia, making contact with the person who became your husband. What were you like at that point in your life?
I was very serious. I think I was very much a person who really wanted to make the world better, and I was quite focused on that, and I loved living with kind of a sense of purpose, you know, having kind of a some sort of vision that I was building towards. And I think even at different stages when I was nursing, I was still doing courses. I would do courses here and there. Even though I went back nursing, I was doing a course on child. It was like an introduction to child psychology. I was constantly kind of educating myself and thinking, will I go abroad again? I suppose that was in my mind at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted to go back. I felt, you know, your life could be very well spent here, you know, with working with people who are in need.
And did you go back, or did you go anywhere else?
I went just for a short trip with my sister and one of my friends to Mozambique after that. But it was a short trip. It was 2 weeks, and there was a group of us that went, and we kind of again went with a very singular purpose of helping build a couple of houses for people there. But I think, you know, even at that, I was very conscious of like the limitations. You know, I felt if I gave more, maybe more would come out of it later. I would learn, you know, it's sometimes it's just the problems will continue to exist.
Yeah.
It certainly makes the world better. But
yeah. And we've covered a lot. We've covered from your early days through to your mid-20s. Is there anything else that you want to add that we perhaps haven't touched on, or you'd like to say more about?
Yeah, no, I think I probably didn't go back to just talking about, like, I think the relationship with my mother at times was strained, I suppose. That's just right. Something I would say because of that situation with my dad. But I think the counselling really helped bring kind of some resolution for me. But it was something that I think even, you know, I continue to be very aware of, is just the, and was very interested in psychology. And, you know, I thought about becoming a counselor even around that time, because I was very impacted by just how, and I think it's something that then I just became very aware when I was working with people, especially the psychology. So people were dealing with their health issue, but there was all the psychology. There was a burden there sometimes. So I could never rest with just, you know, dealing with the kind of their, you know, they need help getting in bed or something like that. So I was constantly thinking about what other thing. And I became very aware of just how in Ireland we weren't really talking enough. I think I did become very aware of that, and the need for more of that, not just within my own family, but just that it was like culturally, it was a problem.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And do you think that's changed in the last sort of 20 years or so, or is it still a problem?
I think it's improved a lot. I think we talk an awful lot more about mental health and the need for mental health services. And we're much more aware of the problems, like with, you know, the effects of things. So like, if somebody loses their job, that's not just that they don't have an income, that how that affects them. Yeah. I do think we're having better conversations, but I think we still struggle a lot to kind of have that kind of honesty and maybe own our own stuff. And that makes it difficult for other people to then like to seek out support, because we talk about it in a more kind of disconnected sense, or maybe like distance, you know, you're talking about the mental health problems rather than, you know, my mental health, you know. So I think we're definitely improving in Ireland. It's definitely, people have more vocabulary to talk about their emotions and things like that, but I think it's still, there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. And did you ever move into counselling and that area of work?
I did a year's training, and but I didn't pursue it then. So I probably had so many interests in my life that but I didn't pursue it. But I suppose I've always worked in kind of helping professions, and I think I've never felt that the things I've done have been wasted in that.
No.
I've used them in some way.
And how did things work out with your mother after you'd returned? What was your relationship like with her then?
Yeah, I mean, I think she was a wonderful person, but a very hard, she was a very closed off person. So, you know, I think, again, it was a generational thing. So she would tell you things sometimes just randomly. But if you were to ask her a question, she wouldn't enjoy it. She didn't like to be asked anything, but she could just offer up something. Like, I had never done the maths, but she was pregnant before she got married, which would have been a huge, huge thing. But she just like said this in passing one day. And I mean, I hadn't sat down and done the maths to kind of, I could have worked it out myself, I'm sure. But you just think she did, it gave me a lot of insight into her as time went on, the kind of the experiences she had that shaped her, why she was so kind of maybe non-judgmental towards people. Whereas I wouldn't necessarily have, I just would have recognized that maybe later. I think as I got older, I was more understanding. I think when you have to pay rent yourself and you're trying to juggle a job and other commitments and friendships and all that, you're kind of a bit more like, I was probably had very high expectations of her. Whereas when I thought about it later and just, I think I became more generous towards her. And once I worked out some of my own emotions,
I think that's common as you get older.
So I mean, I think our relationship improved a lot.
Good.
And, but like that, I didn't never lived again in Mayo, so if that allowed it to just, we weren't right in each other's faces all the time, and that was very helpful, I think, because she again was a person that would just was very happy to have you home, but she wouldn't be hounding you, she wouldn't be expecting a call every week, or she wasn't one of these overly involved mothers, you know, so she gave you a lot of space.
That's good. Anything else that you'd like to add?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
I think that's good. I think you've done well.
Thank you
for that. It was really interesting. And what I'll do now is I'll stop the recording, but we'll just have a chat. Okay.